Hey folks, Preet here. It's a big week in Manhattan. Former President Donald Trump's criminal trial has begun. Joyce Vance joined me to discuss the opening statements, the seating of the jury, and pretrial rulings issued by the judge. If you're a member of Cafe Insider, head over to the Insider feed or click the link in the show notes of this podcast to listen to the full analysis. Stay tuned, listeners. Keep listening here for our discussion. And to become a member of Cafe Insider, head to cafe.com/insider. You can try the membership for just $1 for 1 month. That's cafe.com/insider. Now on to the show. Opening statements. We have to admonish our audience. Every time there's a big case and there's opening statements, I see many members of the media refer to them as opening arguments again and again and again. You know, you don't do it, I don't do it. And the reason they're not opening argument is that you're actually literally under the rules, both in state and federal court, not allowed to make an argument. And we can have a debate about what an argument is and how that's defined and whether or not Todd Blanche in this case transgressed that rule. But you're not making arguments because there's been no evidence presented yet. And so you are just previewing both the defense, if the defense chooses to make an opening statement and has no obligation or duty to make an opening statement, but usually they do, you're previewing what the evidence will show. You're casting it as an overview, foreshadowing what's going to come, but no arguments. I thought both opening statements, you know, were pretty good, to the point. You and I had this conversation about the first line of the prosecutor's opening statement when they referred to this being a case about a conspiracy, which, you know, hit both of our ears a little bit odd, given that there's actually no conspiracy count charged in the indictment. You want to explain that?
You know, when I first heard this, I thought that's interesting because I had always thought of the falsification of the business records as being, you know, the primary component. That's how the case is charged. The explanation that we get in opening statement yesterday, and this was, I thought, a really great roadmap because you'll recall, Preet, one of our first conversations was about the fact that this charge standing alone is a misdemeanor, falsification of business records. It only becomes a felony if it's committed to conceal or aid in the commission of another crime. And under New York law, the DA wasn't required to provide that information in the indictment. We got that yesterday. Yesterday, we learned that there was an election interference conspiracy and that the business records violations were made to aid that conspiracy. And so that's why we get this pretty dramatic opening first line from the prosecution.
Do you think it was compelling?
I thought it was good. Look, if you ever hear an opening statement in a criminal case and you don't think that the prosecution is winning, the prosecution is in trouble, right? This is their opportunity to lay out their case with no interference from the defendant. It damn well better be a cinch at the end. And they did do a good job of explaining how all the pieces fit together. I thought a particularly well-done part was how they handled Michael Cohen. You know, Michael Cohen hasn't always made good choices. He has a criminal conviction. But everything that you hear from his mouth will be corroborated. Cohen will tell the story of some of these meetings he was involved in. And then the prosecution promised that there would be other witnesses, that there would be texts, emails, and other documents. I think the jury needed to hear that in opening statement to suspend any disbelief they might have about Michael Cohen.
Yeah, I mean, I think the hard part of this case is convincing the jury that Donald Trump had the requisite intent and explaining to the jury sort of the central thesis of the prosecution, which is that these payments were not a retainer, were not for legal services, and were in fact this other thing that Donald Trump knew about and understood, right? Because it's a little confusing because some of the money did go to Cohen essentially as a fee for his services, you can call them legal or not. So it's all like bound up with each other. And Ricky and I talked about this last week as well. The degree to which the Trump team can confuse the issue and say, look, at the end of the day, he was a lawyer. He was acting in the legal capacity, you know, understood broadly by the client, Donald Trump. And whether money was used to reimburse someone or money was used for his fees, that was not a distinction that Trump was making necessarily in his own mind. Lawyer's a lawyer. Lawyer gets paid. Lawyer asks for these amounts. And I did it. And so in that sense, it was not a false business record. It's a falsification of a business record. Now, I think that doesn't really fly if you're really carefully paying attention to all this. But I don't know. It could have some surface appeal to one juror. And again, as we've said many times before, all you need is one.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Todd Blanche is only looking for one juror. Maybe it's one of the lawyers who will go off on a technical issue. But I thought he did a great job with his opening statement. I'm sure our listeners won't want to hear that. But look, he makes this suggestion. Invoices were processed and records went into ledgers, and that was all done by people who weren't Trump. He signed checks because he was the signatory on the account. But in essence, other people were doing things, and he's not responsible for Michael Cohen's crimes, is Trump's argument. And I think this is where the rubber is going to meet the road in this case. The prosecutors, they say that they've got the receipts to back all of their evidence up. And if they can prove that, I think when they close, the people will remind jurors of the promises Trump's lawyers made in their opening statement and point out how they have not lived up to those promises. You know, Blanche says, we're going to establish that the story you just heard is not true. Well, if he can't do that, he's going to be in trouble once jury deliberations start.
Yeah. I mean, there are a few other points further to what you just said in Blanche's opening. One I thought was kind of problematic. He said, quote, you'll learn that President Trump had nothing to do with any of the 34 pieces of paper except he signed the checks.
Oops.
Which is a pretty big caveat, right? Nothing to do with him except he signed the checks. And you mentioned that a second ago. But then he also, on this idea of influencing the election, I thought Todd did a pretty good, for his purposes, sleight of hand. And he said this, quote, I have a spoiler alert. There's nothing wrong with trying to influence an election. It's called democracy, end quote, which is a very quotable. It's very memorable. It confuses the issue a little bit, because obviously there are many things you can do to influence an election. You know, obviously that's what you do. You try to get people to vote for you, and that's influencing the election in common parlance. That's not what the prosecutors are talking about here. They're talking about a campaign expenditure that wasn't characterized as such. And that's part of what's unlawful about this and bootstraps it from a misdemeanor to a felony. But it's an effective line, don't you think?
It is, but I suspect the prosecution knows that too, and they're going to make him eat those words.
You think?
I do.
Did they anticipate that line in their opening statement, as you might want to do, and eviscerate the impact of it beforehand? I don't think they did.
I don't think so. I think that when they'll do it is in closing argument. I think we'll hear them say that and explain the many ways in which the evidence proves it's wrong.
Here's the other thing I think is kind of funny. Blanche, on at least one occasion, if not more, talked about how Trump is frugal, which is a euphemism for cheap. He says, quote, ask yourself, would a frugal businessman who pinches pennies repay a $130,000 debt to the tune of $420,000, end quote. Is that as an effective a line as Todd seemed to think it was?
You know, I think it sort of proves too much. My friend Asha Rangappa had a really good take on this. Because Trump pinches pennies, you can be sure that if he paid that amount, he knew precisely what he was doing. She sort of turned it on its head. And I think that that's a good interpretation. And again, something that the prosecution will push.
It's kind of an interesting thing and a pattern with Trump that as a method of defense, he or the people around him suggest that known aspects of his personality would make an accusation not credible, right? So I'm cheap. E. Jean Carroll's not my type. There was an earlier occasion with respect to a rumored particular tape you may recall from some years ago.
I do.
What did Trump say? He's like, I'm a germaphobe, right? With respect to a particular unsavory video that was rumored to exist. It's kind of interesting. I'm not sure of other people who do that. Like, here's what I am. I'm this kind of a person. And so I wouldn't engage in conduct that's at variance with the kind of person I am. I don't think that works very well. And it doesn't work very well in what is supposed to be a rigorous court of law. Where I think Blanche was also effective, and this is not a surprise because he has, you know, decent material to work with, is the overall veracity and credibility of Michael Cohen, who will be one of the government's important witnesses. And that's totally understandable. It's totally predictable. I thought he did it in a fairly compelling way by saying, among other things, quote, his entire, this is Michael Cohen, his entire financial livelihood depends on President Trump's destruction. And then he says in a way that I think is a good way for lawyers to speak about it, that, quote, you cannot make a serious decision about President Trump relying on the words of Michael Cohen, end quote. And, you know, we will have the rejoinder, and the prosecutors, more importantly, will have the rejoinder. Well, here he doesn't have an incentive to lie because there would be consequences. Also, he's corroborated, there's supporting evidentiary document record supporting the testimony. But the point that Todd Blanche is trying to get across, and the defense would in any case where somebody with the baggage of Michael Cohen has, is to say that the entire prosecution is infected. And the government got into bed with somebody they shouldn't have gotten into bed with. And the mere fact of that person coming on and testifying in a way that we argue can't believe and can't trust means you got to throw the whole case out. Now, that doesn't logically follow because you can convict, you know, even if you discount to some degree Michael Cohen's testimony and have all the supporting corroboration, as we've mentioned and often talked about. But if you can get a juror to think that the case stinks because it relies in part and in substantial part on this convicted liar, and I, you know, it's a strong word, but he was convicted of making a false statement to Congress, then the whole case has to go. And again, as we've said many, many times, only one person has to feel that way to hang up the jury.
Yeah, that's exactly right. This is sort of the elf defense, right? You sit on a throne of lies. The whole case is built on these lies that come from Michael Cohen, and you bootstrapped everything back into him. And only one juror has to buy that for the case to be kaput. And the prosecution's response will be, we have corroborated everything that you've heard from Michael Cohen, and we did not pick Michael Cohen as our witness. We wish we could bring you a choir boy, but we can't because Donald Trump gets to pick the witnesses that we're forced to use against him. And that's really what they've got.
Yeah. But the problem is that it's not just sort of usually it's the bad conduct that the co-conspirator has engaged in, right? Breaking the law, having to plead guilty to something else or being convicted of something else. Here, subsequent to the conduct, Michael Cohen is engaged in a pattern of behavior that's problematic for him as a witness. As Todd Blanche also said, you know, and it's not much of a distortion, quote, he, Michael Cohen, has a goal, an obsession with getting President Trump. And he says, therefore, I submit to you that he cannot be trusted. You know, I made some of these comments when I was doing commentary last week about Michael Cohen, and a couple of people in my mentions on Twitter got annoyed and said I was being mean on Michael Cohen. I have nothing against Michael Cohen at all, and he's doing a service by testifying. I'm just sort of being clear-eyed about, you know, the downside and the challenges of having Michael Cohen be a witness here, given the course of conduct and given what he was convicted of. It's not the easiest thing in the world. I hope and believe that most of the jurors, if not all the jurors, will believe him because of the corroboration. But, you know, you can't look away from the problems.
I agree with that. And look, this is one of the few good cards Todd Blanche has been dealt in crafting a defense for Donald Trump. So he will be all over it. Michael Cohen himself, I don't think is helping. You know, he has some tweet last night where he calls Trump a crass name.
Why is he doing that?
And it's like watching two schoolyard bullies. I don't know if, you know, if I'm in the Manhattan DA's office, I'm just cringing, but perhaps they will turn that on their head a little bit to say, look, we don't control this guy. I don't know. It's a mess. I do have a question though. Cohen is out there talking publicly about Trump. Why hasn't Trump's team asked for a gag order that would cover Michael Cohen?
I don't know. I mean, the prosecutor should ask for a gag order.
Yeah, really?
No, because they can use all those statements. They can use all those statements to show, look, this line is a compelling line. He has a goal and obsession with getting President Trump. That's a stated goal of his. And look, it may be a meritorious one, you know. It may be good for America, it may be good for democracy. Doesn't play well in a court of law.
You know, I assume that the reason they haven't asked for a gag order is because it feeds into their defense. And this is for sure going to be the battle over Cohen's credibility will be a serious one, which is why I just don't think these prosecutors would have walked into court unless they've got the corroboration locked down. Cohen is really risky. He's not their opening witness, by the way. If they were super confident about his testimony and how it would land, he would have been their first witness. But I don't think they want to deal with the vicious cross-examination that's going to happen straight up front.
Yeah, that would have been a huge error. Thanks for listening. To hear more of my conversation with Joyce Vance and never miss our weekly coverage of the Trump trials, the Supreme Court, and more, head to cafe.com/insider to become a member of Cafe Insider. You can try out the membership for just $1 for 1 month. That's cafe.com/insider.
Canva presents stories to keep you up at night. It was an ordinary work day until...
The Singapore presentation is at 3 a.m.
The office was shocked.
That's when we sleep.
Maya made it less scary with Canva.
I'll just record my presentation so Singapore can watch it anytime.
Record and present anytime with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Support for this show comes from Fundrise. Buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise Flagship Fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its $1 billion real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise Flagship Fund to your portfolio in just minutes and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/fox. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise Flagship Fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.